Welcome to Charged Up Studio Live, where small business owners get charged up for success. Are you a small business owner? Do you find yourself struggling through the many responsibilities that come with the title entrepreneur? Well, we're here for you. Charged Up Studio is hosted by Market Academy LLC, your prescription for what we call OPA. What is OPA? It's when you become so overwhelmed with the confusion that comes with business ownership that you become paralyzed and ultimately avoid doing anything in hopes it will take care of itself or you put it off till later. Does that sound familiar? I'm your host, Dan Olivo, and each week we bring a business professional eager to charge you up as they talk about the many things that keep you from moving forward with your small business. So are you ready to get charged up for success? Let's hit it. So welcome back to Charged Up Studio, where we bring you insightful conversations with industry leaders and experts. I'm Dana Olivo, your host. And today we're continuing our monthly focus on the digital leap, navigating the future of business transformation. Today, we're going to a place where ideas spark, innovations thrive, and the future of business comes alive. We're going to do a deep dive into product innovation and the art of meeting customer needs before they even know they want them. In this ever-evolving marketplace, businesses are constantly challenged to think outside the box, to redefine what's possible, and to create products that not only meet but exceed customer expectations. It's a journey that blends with creativity with practicality, vision, and insight, and ambition with empathy. Today's guest has turned the sound system universe on its head with its patented Lucid ULD loudspeakers. Let's find out why and how this came about by speaking to the man himself, Mr. Dennis Alpha. Welcome, Dennis.
Good morning, Dana. Great to see you again.
Coming straight from the bridge of Star Trek here, huh?
That's right. I'm in orbit. I'm always in orbit. Got to think high above the clouds.
That's what it takes. Is thinking above the fringe here, you know, being so far out there that your ideas become reality is actually what it is. So before we get started, I always like to ask my guests one specific question. It kind of breaks the ice. So are you ready for this?
Give it a go.
If you were to go back and confront your younger self in time, what sage advice would you give him and at what age?
I should have had more time to think about this, obviously. What sage advice? There's quite a few instances. I would tell my younger self, do not get off of a bus and walk in front of it, because it will be a traumatic moment for you, because the bus driver doesn't always look in front of the bus and he looks over his shoulder, and there could be a car in the road next to where the bus is when you jump out.
Oh, so, my gosh.
I would give that advice. I'd give quite a few bits of advice, but that's one of the ones high on my list. And I would say, start to own your own business a lot younger than you did. But that's kind of crazy, too, because I've had business since I was a child. I was started by learning electronics when I was really young, self-taught. And I'd read everything on electronics at my local library. And I actually ended up owning that building. It was the only 10-sided building in the country. But I read everything on electronics, and I was repairing, and actually never just repairing. I always had to modify everything. So I'd repair 5-tube radios and TVs, but I'd always supercharge them. I'm kind of like the Shelby Mustang guy. Why is it that they do this? Why did there's so much better ways of doing things, but they don't do it because of cost. And but they don't think outside the box either.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of that show. What is it? That Tim More Power? What's that show? Tim Allen was on it.
Oh, Tim Allen, whatever. Yes.
Yeah. Home Improvement. Home
Home
Improvement.
Improvement. Home Improvement.
That's what it
So.
reminds me of. So,
But
well, Cole.
that's what I love doing is making things. I consider myself my number one title. People say inventor, but I think I'm a technology maximizer. And most technology, if you look at it and you really stop and think about how people apply technology, they don't look at the big picture from end to end. They focus on people, everything across the board. When people make brakes, they either use brake shoes or calipers, and that's what they've always done. And that's what everybody repeats and does the same. They never stop and think. And the real key is, what if we didn't have this technology? How would we accomplish what we're trying to do? Does that make sense?
It
If
does.
you
It
didn't have,
does.
if you didn't have rubber wipers, if you didn't have windshield wipers, how would you clean your window?
In your
And
windows.
so everybody always does windshield wipers on cars. And it's just, would it be the best way? And it's usually when you reach most technologies and they reach a brick wall where they just can't get any better. Then somebody comes up with a totally different way and you go, it's like the guy jumping backward over the pole vault. He goes, ah, it's a totally different way of looking at things. And that's the way you got to do it. You've got to have it, you know, totally a different way. So,
and you know, I love the fact that you're saying this because I'm right now, I am in the middle of developing a feasibility study for a technology. Actually, he's a distributor right now, ceramic ball bearings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in the middle of doing a feasibility.
And if you make them in outer space, they're perfectly circular.
Yeah. That's true. Well, right now, you know, probably 90% of them are manufactured overseas.
Well, the
China.
Real deal is, well, we could go on a whole conversation about ceramic ball bearings.
Yeah.
They could take huge amounts of heat. They can have an extremely smooth surface, which is what it's about. But actually, it's a little bit contrary to that because you need some way of adhering some of the oil. So if they're super smooth, they don't always work as good as you would think because they're a little bit of porous. They need some place to hold some kind of a, you know, anti. But anyway,
well, the reason
why do people keep calling when I tell them not to? Whatever. I've had the phone off. I've got it on airplane. So I don't know how in the world I'm getting phone calls on airplane. Mystery of life.
You're Mr. Technology here. You should know this, you know.
Well, it's a new software. It's Apple's latest thing, so you know how that is.
It'll be updated again tomorrow, so.
Actually, not so much with Apple products, but with the other side, there's a lot of updates. I prefer the Apple products.
Well, the reason I am doing this feasibility study is they are looking at the feasibility for locating and building a manufacturing plant here in the U.S. for these ceramic ball bearings, because there's such a demand right now with the new technology coming down the pike that, you know, for more, you know, stronger, sturdier ball bearings, you know, and assemblies and things like that. So, you know, it's really interesting that we're talking about this. And I have learned so much about ceramic ball bearings and, you know, and hybrid ball, you know, ball bearings and assemblies than I ever thought I would doing.
Well, Ohio's the epicenter of ball bearings with Timken and all the bearing companies here is one of the big places. And because of the steel mills, you know, Timken bearings here and the steel mills are here and they've tried some of the imported bearings and they last like an hour in
and
a
that's
steel mill.
Exactly it.
So that's
exactly it. And then by the time we don't, and then the other thing is we don't want to get back into a situation like we were in COVID when you're.
You don't want to get there again.
Yeah.
What's interesting is even in the offshore stuff, most of the stuff is being done with automated lines and robotics. There's not that much. There's certain industries where there's a lot of manpower, but some of the mass produced stuff is really machinery these days. It's not so much. It's people running the machines and, you know, doing that sort of stuff, design. So that could be done from anywhere. That's the real advantage COVID gave us, as you could Zoom. You could do remote engineering. You couldn't do that before. So
exactly.
Anyway, to get back to our basic concept is how do you make products? Yeah. How do you make products? And it's all about paying attention to who your customers are.
Right.
And most people, when somebody says, well, I don't like the way this does something or another, and they never stop to think, geez, that's a great opportunity that you can improve on. So our business, actually, my main business was medical electronics, and we had equipment in about 85% of cardiac cath labs in the U.S., and we did about 95% of something called teleradiography in Ohio. We'd send images over phone lines and ISDN and stuff like that, pretty high-tech stuff. And mm-hmm. we also found out that if you do real niche market stuff, like we had a service business, that pretty good one, that we only serviced really super state-of-the-art stuff or really, really, really legacy stuff, because nobody can handle those two ends. It makes a real niche market. If you're super state-of-the-art, it's very few people using it, and it's high, high pay. And if you're really old, old stuff, like, even in machine tools, if you've got punch presses that have a computer on them, they might have only made very few of those computers, and the people that make them are gone and dead. And, you know, you got a machine that does 200 tons and it's got an old PC dedicated computer, you're going to keep it running, because to reprogram it and do new software to replace the machine's $500,000 or whatever. So you'll keep that thing going for decades.
Right. Right.
So those ends of the industry are always good to be in a niche market. You can develop customer rapport, and then all the other people in that industry get the word that you're, it's like, I know people that update pipe organs, and there's only a few people in the country that do pipe organs.
Right.
And it's a very specialized job, and a pipe organ to rebuild, it's over $1 million. So, and there's enough of them around that you can make a pretty darn good living doing pipe organs, and be the go-to expert.
Exactly. So on that topic, give us a little information on your Lucid loudspeakers.
Well, we built two systems. We built one that's called a ULD-TD Lucid. That's it came about because I was helping a friend that was doing preaching in a gym. And we would, you go in, you throw a couple of speakers up in a mixer and all that stuff. You get to the back of the gym, he'd get hundreds of people, because he was a former drug dealer, and he'd actually brought 160 people to Christ that were his former customers, actually. So when he became a believer, he'd be a real powerful speaker. Really, this guy could get you up and going. And you go to the back of the room, you haven't a clue of what he's saying, because it's just Echo City. We've all been in gyms. It's like, and the more echoes it's not about volume. It's not about frequency response. It's about, if you've got a 1 second delay, if you want to kill a politician, just send back to him whatever he's saying or he's saying a 1 second delay, and it will stop you dead in your tracks. You can't even talk. So when you're trying to listen, that echo it makes it unintelligible, especially for older people. So my background's been in military stuff and high tech, everything across the board from A to Z, from audio all the way up. I've got a first class FCC license and a ham extra. And both of those licenses I got like in 20 minutes, all the tests taken at one time and aced them. Long story. But anyway, it's with that information about doing diagnostic ultrasound for cardiac and for abdominal and babies and all that, I knew something called beamforming, and I actually went home and had a dream about how to make a speaker that passively can focus sound so it spreads 180, but it doesn't go up or down. And when you have sound bouncing off a ceiling, it's so far away, by the time it comes back and hits the floor and goes back, in a gym, that's where your echoes are. Okay. Plus, in most gyms and in most meeting rooms, the speakers are overhead, but you hear forward. So your ears, which way do your ears point? They don't point up. They don't point behind you. They point forward. And most sound systems are at the ceiling. And so it's bouncing the sound on the ground and bouncing back up and bouncing back down. And so I came up with a system where we've got these columns, but they'll project 1,500, 2,000 feet without losing volume. So we did like the whole Cleveland Zoo. The first time we put the prototypes in, they had a awards banquet for the people at that boys club gym. And the professional speaker that came in and talked all over the world and said he'd never heard anything that clear and echo-free in his whole experience in gyms, and numerous other people. There's a lady that's a world expert on bouncing basketball. She could spin a whole slew of them at one time. Very famous. In fact, she worked with LeBron James on how to handle balls. She's that famous. So she's known all over the world. And she hears one of these columns. We did a thing, Youth for Christ, that at one of the elementary schools, they bought one of these speakers on the spot. It's that amazing what these things do. So we got this little column, and it's all about the total picture. It's not about just having something that does something. How do you package it? What's it look like? How fast is it to install? Most speakers hang with a ball and brackets and all that. We made a bracket that's just got like four slots and four little tongs, and it just slides in and you lock it. So like the install is two screws. My great-great-granddaughter can take a drill driver at 8 years old, mount two screws to a metal stainless steel plate, slide the speaker in, put up, and you're done. You're done. Same with the wiring we're using. We made it so that it will run on 500 feet of telephone wire. You know how small telephone wire is? So your connections are telephone connections. You plug it into it, and you could staple it around and do a church or do a house or whatever. You don't have big, heavy cable, and that's expensive. Copper is expensive. So it's analyzing the whole problem from one end to the other. And sometimes the physics that we're told, and this is what kept the Wright brothers from flying 2 years before they did, is they took the math of what angle of attack was and stuff that was the printed literature, and it was bullshit. So they made their own wind tunnel and came up with their own numbers. And as soon as they did that, they had the formula for making the wing what it's supposed to be. But they relied on other people. So don't always believe that when somebody says something, you got to go back and say, you got to prove it to yourself that is this really working, or is this somebody who's just monkey see, monkey do? It's throughout life. You go in your bathroom and you go in the shower and you reach through that boiling water to adjust the shower on the shower head. And you go, why wouldn't you put the control on the other side of the doggone tub or on the back of the tub? And it's like, well, you know, you brought it 200 feet to get here, so you can't run a little bit more plumbing to the other side of the tub. But everybody comes straight up and puts the shower head, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't make it right, but it's the way everybody puts speakers overhead, and it's the worst place for you to listen to them. And you want to localize when somebody's talking. If I put the sound behind you, if you go home, put two TVs on the exact same channel, put the sound behind you, watch a movie you've never seen, try to follow, even though it's crystal clear.
Oh, yeah.
You're disorganized. Your brain is divided in numerous places. When the speakers are in the front and they actually localize and projects the image where you are, we did the Holographic Holocaust Museum in Chicago. We did the sound and a lot of the equipment for it. But it was a three-dimensional projection system. There's no place for a center channel. But we were able, with just two of our columns, and the columns right dead behind the person's at the podium, it produced the sound directly from the stage wherever it belonged, so that your imagination, and people think it's really a person. If you watch PBS on, it's called Life 2.0, they use that as one of the primary things of what the future holds, because you could have a conversation with somebody that isn't there, and you think they're there. So it's looking at things totally different. It's looking at what do you really need, and what is really the whole picture from end to end. If you want to do any industry, I don't care if it's in concrete or whatever you're doing, you want to analyze what's come before, what's all the information, what's the weak points, and what's the strong points. But you've got to really analyze how people use it. And it's all about how quick can you set something up and use it.
Right.
We get too much involved in technology. I drive a Tesla X. And to me, some of the things like the remote controls, a little car. So if you want to open up the trunk, you tap on the trunk. If you want to open the side, you tap on the side. Instead of like, well, which button am I going to hit on this button, this remote control for your TV? It's not human good interface. You follow? It's like, it's just so many things are like that. You sit in the car, you don't turn it on. Because why are you sitting in the seat? You know, I mean, you're going to drive it. You put a CD in a player. Why do you have to put it in and hit play?
And that's where, you know, our audience here is they want to know, okay, they're experts in their fields, okay, they know what they know, but what they're lacking, or I don't want to say that they're lacking, what they need to be looking at is looking ahead, okay, as they're dealing with their customers, anticipating what the needs are of those customers. Where is the market going? What is it that they can bring to what their offerings are, whether a product or service, that's going to fit within the changing scope of what's being presented out there?
Well, I think the real deal, too, is whenever you have an idea, I think there's something they call MVP. Everybody's heard of minimum viable product.
Exactly.
And I'm a big supporter of what's the easiest way to make a product, and you want to get it in people's hands and you want feedback to them so that they are actually part of the development of it. And instead, most companies will develop a whole product, be it software or anything, hardware especially. They'll build a whole product and then they go and sell it to people, as opposed to you build a minimum viable product that solves a problem. And a good example, our newest product, our hottest product right now, we've got the column speakers. We did the Cleveland Zoo with 7 of those things. But our really hot product right now, we have a little speaker that's 12 inches tall. And we use the same technology as the big one. So we beamform this little column, will fill an auditorium of 2,000 people. And it runs off of a battery, and it's got 4 overhead mics. And the way that that evolved when we first came up with the idea on how to do it, we actually went out and bought sound bars and we cut them in real small. Then we put our own speakers into them and we put our own electronics in so we could use the grill in the box. We didn't have to pay for injection molding. We didn't have to pay to make a grill. We got a finished product looking thing immediately out in people's hands. Then we needed to go feedback as to, you know, how many mics do you need? Well, we by having them out there, we need 2 handheld mics on most meetings. And you need a couple over the years, and you need to do Bluetooth. You have to do Bluetooth because you're doing PowerPoint. But we quickly realized our real market is to go on a plane. So we made everything fit in a carry-on little box that fits underneath your seat. You're not charged the personal carry-on. But it evolved. And now we've added, just recently, we're adding a pull-up handle and wheels and still be in the same space so that when you're carrying this thing weighs like 14 pounds for the total system. But 14 pounds when you're walking around at trade shows gets heavy. Right. So until you start putting them out and you get feedback from people, you know, this is great, but you know, you're going to schluck the thing. So, right. Plus you got to pull all the mics out to plug them in to charge them at night. Now we've evolved it to a case where it charges all the mics and you got one cord plugs in the wall to charge everything in the case. Then you unplug that and it plugs into the speaker and you can leave the box closed and run your system, and we've added a little tripod. So it evolves, but you got to start out with a minimum viable thing, and you want to get feedback from your customers. Otherwise, you build products that aren't that customer friendly, and they'll evolve any software, anything, if you don't get feedback from your people. Right. And the other thing, if you don't reach out to your people that have already bought stuff from you, it's easier to resell your existing customer. It's 80-20. As they always say, you want to go back to your customers that trust you and value you, because they'll buy your junk prototype. And then part of the deal is when you evolve whatever your product is, software or whatever, we've always got a policy that as it evolves, you're going to have the first loss leader, the first people that's going to buy it, actually pay list price, buy it. Then as you improve it, you go, hey, I'll trade you. We started off, let's say at 1500, we went to 2500. We'll give you your 1500 back. You give us another grand, you get the latest. So they have no loss. There's an advantage for them being on board as you evolve the product. And then you get customers that are, you never want a satisfied customer. I know you've heard this, right? Mm-hmm. You've heard that. You know, you never want a satisfied customer. Would you agree with that statement?
No, I mean, you want them happy.
You never want a satisfied customer. What you really want is a loyal customer. When you go to McDonald's and you get a Big Mac, you pay whatever the crazy price is these days. You buy a 50-cent hamburger for $2, $3. Then if you went to Burger King, you're satisfied with what you bought, but you'll go to Wendy's. But a loyal customer only goes to Wendy's, and they tell their friends to go to Wendy's.
Exactly.
They not only are so happy with your service, and it's all about how you treat them as people. You don't give them some silly, you know, answering machine that, you know, press 9, press this. I mean, I'm a vet, right?
Yeah.
And when you call the vet, they would say, if you're thinking of committing suicide and this, that, and the other, dial such and such a number. And the first time I heard that, I know people at the VA directly. I call them up. I go, are you out of your freaking mind? You got to have something that if you're feeling hit 7, you know what I mean? Yes. Don't tell them, hang up, write down this number, and you set it off. So the guy doesn't have paper and he goes, well, screw it, I'll just kill myself. You know, it's like, I tried, you know, but it's like, you can transfer people, just do it. You know what I mean? Comedy, what are you thinking?
Well, those loyal customers ultimately become your sales team on the back end. But what I want to revisit is when you were talking about your MVP, your minimum minimally viable product that you had developed. Okay. What I think some of our audience probably missed, or it wasn't said, you were talking about how they needed to carry it on the plane, they, you know, this, the size and the weight and everything. But what I don't think they realized is your target audience at that time was public speakers.
Right. My target audience at that time were people going into prison ministry. Because when you do prison ministry, when you go into a prison, you've got anything you take in, if you've got a speaker system, every little cord, every little connection, every little thing you have to have a list of. And what you get is when you have that list, it works also for when you're in schools or you got a rental company.
Right.
So you have a list where here's what's going in and here's what's coming out. And it's got little pictures and it, you know, and it's a self-contained thing. You open it up and it's bing, 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 you're up and running. And that's what's needed. Okay. That's what's needed on most things. They, you know, these things like you get in your car and you go, the clock's off. Well, how in the frick do you set the clock? You got to get out the manual and you got to hit this button and that button. You go, really? You know, like with all the technology, you can't get that from the web. You can't get that. The radio station has encoding on it. You can't update the clock for them. Like, really? The VCRs with the flashing digits was like, and they're tied in the TV, and that's part of the what they call VITS that's on the TV things is the most accurate time signal in the world. You go, like, you can't, you know where the person is. You got geotagging on everything. You know where we're at. You know what time it is.
First time I got into a push button start car, I must have spent 10 minutes there trying to figure, how do I turn the stupid thing on? You know, I pushed the button, nothing happened. It wasn't until I put my foot on the brake and pushed the button did I realize the car started.
And oh, by the way, didn't you realize that anybody, you know, a certain company has it to where when you shut off the computer, you go to start. So if you'd never seen a computer before, I mean, who in their world would go to start and go, oh, that's where you turn it off. You go start to stop. It doesn't say turn off. Well, if it knows you're already on, it shouldn't say start because it can't start. It's already started. It should say turn off. You know, I mean, just saying.
Let's make it easy. But the point of the matter is you knew who your customer was when you were developing this. It started as prison ministry, you know, and things like that, but it could be expanded into schools, into public speaking, to all of this, you know, and the fact that, you know, what are they struggling with? You know, if they're going to be carrying around the equipment all the time, you know, I don't know for sure, but from based on what I'm seeing, you might even be able to, or you already are getting into, say, the concert arena.
Well, we've avoided that. We've built, and that's one of the reasons we made the portable system, because everybody's making sound systems to do music. Everybody, you could go on, you know, Guitar Center, everybody's got a woofer and a horn, and they do music, and everybody's focused on music. Then they took those same kind of technologies to do speaking. But speaking is totally different than doing music. In order to have clarity of voice, when you get big speakers going, they have a lot of mass. So if you imagine the bigger the speaker, you could get bass really good. And actually, 95% of all energy acoustically is 100 hertz down, is low frequencies. 95% of your energy. So only 5% is the upper stuff. But everybody's trying to do music. But then they're using it for talking. So nobody's focusing on just talking. So the people that make portable systems make them so you can play music. But if you go to most meetings, they're not playing music. They're going to play a little something on PowerPoint. But really, it's about dialogue, which is, you know, believing comes from hearing. And if you can't understand who's speaking to you, you've missed the boat. And even in like a church, if they have a group of a couple hundred people and they're not playing music, you've got to pay somebody to run that 50-foot long mixing board and the lights and all the other stuff. And on most meetings, you have to have a sound engineer for what? And this thing, you don't even need power. You set it down and it's got a battery and you start talking. So we focused to do the bands. We've got equipment in, movie theaters. I got somebody at my doorbell. Can I stop at this at all? I got it. I should get this doorbell. Stop for a second? I'm sorry. Validation of you're making the right stuff.
Okay, so we're going to start that up again. Okay. And let me go on to our next question here. Okay, continuing our conversation, let's talk about how your product enhances the listening experience For the end user. I think we already talked about that, so we don't need to worry about that.
We don't need to worry about that.
Yeah. What I want to know, and I want to express to our listeners, okay, is if they're in the product development or even service enhancement or whatever industry, what should they be looking for when they're dealing with their clients to get a better understanding on how they can get ahead of whatever enhancements they need to make? You know what I'm saying?
Does that make sense? It's different for different industries. If we're talking about a service like an electronic service, or service is considered where you could do cleaning fluids and stuff for people. So can we kind of narrow it down a little bit more about what you're thinking of? Or,
well, a perfect example. Okay, let me. And then this is in the service side, but it may also be the product side. It could be both sides. Okay. A few years ago, I use Apple products all the time. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I am, my service provider is T-Mobile. Now, mm-hmm. I went in there and, well, I had an iPhone 6. This was a while ago. Okay. I had an iPhone 6 and I kept losing memory. And it was really frustrating because my phone would just cut out. I'd cut out in calls and things like that. And I couldn't figure out, and I hate to have to be able to take my phone in to T-Mobile and have it checked out. I finally broke down and I took it in. And he tells me, he says, oh, we're at an iPhone 10 now. We don't service this anymore, an iPhone 6. And he says, and your problem is that with all the spam calls coming in and you're blocking those, it's eating up your memory. And my comment to him is, okay, first of all, I've got this phone. It's under my business name. You know it's a business phone, okay? And I'm sure I'm not the only one who has complained about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, why is it that I have to come in here to find out what the restrictions, what are the problems I'm having with my phone, rather than you proactively reaching out to me and telling me, look, we see you have the iPhone 6. You use it for business. Here is where there are some issues with the iPhone 6. We're now offering iPhone 10 with an upgrade, you know, all this other stuff. Says, why hasn't that happened? They said, well, Apple sends all this stuff out. I said, Apple's emails, I just delete because I don't deal with Apple. I'm dealing with T-Mobile. All right. That's what I'm saying is, how can our customers understand to be proactive? How can they become more proactive in understanding what their clients' needs are before their clients even know? Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but the thing that you have with technology is you've got somebody that manufactured something, then you got people who distribute that something. Mm-hmm. So if you were to consider this, if you were to go to say you have a problem with your washer and dryer and you bought it from Best Buy, would you go mm-hmm. to Best Buy or would you go to Whirlpool or whoever made the washer and their service? Because the really technical stuff, if you go to the Apple in particular, if you go to their Genius Bar, which they don't charge you for, they know more about that phone than T-Mobile may. Okay. So mm-hmm. the T-Mobile guy knows about rates and plans and all this kind of stuff and how to sell you extra hardware and cords and all that stuff, knows really very little about the machine. And in fact, most times, most people won't admit that they don't know what they're talking about. And they'll just imagine something. So, for example, what you just said to me just flies in the face of what reality is, because to block a phone number is like a couple of bits to say you don't want that. When you store video, it's gigabytes of bits. So if you've got X amount of storage in your phone, you could literally block on an iPhone 6, you could block 100 million people and it wouldn't use up your memory. It wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. So they just assume, they just tell you something because they don't want to look like they're stupid. Okay. Right. But it's like, I went to a good example, T-Mobile. I went to T-Mobile. I've got a foster father who used to live in Savannah, Tennessee, not Savannah. The other Savannah, Tennessee. T-Mobile is non-existent and they don't have a cooperative event with like Verizon. you get within 100 miles of Savannah, Tennessee, you have zero phone communication, none. And I went down a couple of times and I called T-Mobile and I go, you know, I'm going back down here. I don't have any service. Do I need to buy another phone? Oh, no, no. We put up a couple of new towers. You get down there. You know what? No service. You got to go to McDonald's and go on Wi-Fi. So I call and I say, you know, the phone's got two memory slots. It can have two SIMs. And I talked to T-Mobile and I talked to Verizon, and both of them tell me, oh, no, that's so you could have two numbers from T-Mobile, according to T-Mobile, or you could have two phone numbers from Verizon. You go, why would I want two? You know, well, you'd have one as business and whatever. The reality is I now have my phone. It easily does Verizon and T-Mobile at the same time. I could have numbers. I could go anywhere in the country. And either one of them will tell you you can't, because they don't know, and they don't know what they don't know. And it's why it was designed the way it was. So you got to kind of take anything that's technical. You always want to look at who manufactured the stuff. Hopefully should know more about it than somebody selling. So that's one piece of advice I'll gladly give you, is you don't go to your service provider, because all they really know is plans and phones and rates and stuff. They're not technical people.
But they're telling,
they know basically how to use. They think they know a bit about it, but most of them, it's gone so complex. There's so many things you could do with the phones that you never really learn all the tricks and things you could do with them. It really is. It's really gone beyond, and they don't make it easier. It's like things should be really, really. When you put in somebody's phone number, when you put in an address, it should come up with the number pad first. Hello, they don't. It comes up with an alphanumeric. So how many people have an address starts with a letter? Mm-hmm. It's always a number, 99.999% of the time. So, and if you just put in the zip code first, it's, UPS does this, put in the zip code. My Palm Pilot used to fill in all the other stuff, because if you got the zip, you know the city and state.
Right.
Makes sense? So why would you?
No, it makes sense, you know, and these are the kind of things that, you know, we need to be looking at, okay, even if it's our own usage that we're doing, or our clients or whatever, okay, put yourself in their shoes. How are they searching for information? How are they using your products or services? How are they, you know, what are they saying that I wish it could do this? Or I wish,
right. And one of the things that you should do is, when people call in, they're angry. And when you call any of the helplines, they go, well, we're very sorry. I don't want you to be sorry. I just want the problem taken care of. And they have a script that they got to read. They get a script and they'll just keep repeating the same thing again and again and again. You go, I really don't want that. I want a solution to my problem. Mm-hmm. And what we don't do as companies, we don't really show appreciation for our customers. I really believe that if you just meet somebody at first, and you meet them at a meeting or whatever, everybody sends an email out. I think that's, or a text. I'm just buried with, you know, no one ever talks. And I think there's still a huge place for communication. And one of them is, if you send somebody a thank you card, a handwritten thank you card, they'll open it. Send your customers Christmas cards. Send them birthday cards. I don't care if they haven't bought anything from you in 10 years. You got to stay on your customers are your bread and butter. And it's like, you want to, it's treat your friends like family and treat your family like friends. It's that easy.
It's funny that you talk about that. One of my biggest pet peeves right now is the fact that when I go to a meeting or a networking meeting or exhibit or whatever, you know, and I ask for a card, and I specifically ask for a card. Okay. And all they have is the QR code. And when I scan that QR code into my phone, I can never find the damn connection or the damn thing later on. Okay. It's like, you know, guys, you're creating additional problems by trying to simplify the process, you know? So, but you know, it's, those are the kind of things. Let's think, let's put ourselves in the customer's shoes. And let's look at, okay, how are they using our products? You know, what are they saying they wish? What's the competition doing? Watch the competition. What are they doing that's different than what you're doing? You know, what are their customers complaining about? You know, those are the kind of things that I want my audience to be able to understand, is you've got to keep your ears, you know, to the ground. You've got to be listening to what the customers are saying. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself behind the eight ball, and your competition is going to be out there introducing a new iPhone 10 or iPhone 16.
But
or
you
whatever.
Do have to you have to do that with a little bit of, you know, caution, because if you talk to your customers, you can get feedback from them, and you kind of take it in. But most of them, especially salespeople are famous for this. Right. When they're trying to make a sale and the sale's not happening, they go, well, what feature do you need? And you'll have people that just want a certain feature that's maybe 10 people in the world would want. And then they'll say, boy, if it only did this, because they're looking for a reason not to buy what you're selling.
Right.
And
right.
So they'll say, well, if only did, then they run back to engineering. They go, well, our customer says if this did this, then they would buy. Well, you make right. this do this, and then they still right. don't buy because right. they were never going to buy. So you got to be real cautious. But there's a lot of customer things. We used to build super high resolution recorders for the cardiac cath labs. And one of our customers down in West Virginia, a really nice Indian cardiologist, he says, you know, one of the problems with the VCRs, he says, is, you know, the buttons light up when you hit them, but you're in a totally black room and you can't see them to hit them. And I go, oh, so we came back and immediately the very next deck we built, the buttons were dim. And when you hit them, they went bright.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was one of those things like, why didn't the people that make the recorders, the buttons light up after you hit them? Well, what the hell good is it after you hit them? So we made them so that they were dim and then they got bright when you hit them. So, you know, exactly, you see all the buttons. And it was like, and that one doctor, because of him, every hospital in West Virginia in the private offices and the hospitals had our equipment across the board because we listened to them and we really wanted to get feedback that's a useful thing. But if they'd said such and such and such and such, if only it made coffee, well, you know, then I'd buy it myself, you know? So, but it's like,
no, it's
so
true.
You want to keep it so it's got the proper features. And one of the other things is you want to bundle things, obviously. If you're building a gizmo, the real deal is you got the basic thing like in a car, but then you go, well, if you get this now, we could add this now for such and such a price. And you give them a choice. You could add it later on, but it's going to cost you more, you know, but it will do this and this, but we're doing it, and every person, you know, will donate, whatever. But you want to be able to have other options available so you don't have a lot of different stuff. You keep the same SKUs all the time. You don't want a million different products. I look at the speaker business and I go, any three-letter company or however many letters, they've got like a million different speakers. And you go, we have one model for commercial that's 40 inches long that works in movie theaters, home theater, and gyms, and football fields, outdoor in the weather. It's one product, does everything, and it does everything extremely well. Right. Then you have the little guy. And that's it. Keep it real simple. Right. Otherwise, you end up with too many products and you end up just trying to maintain that many products. It'll just kill you when you start really tracking and manufacturing. You try to, you know, Henry Ford used the same stuff. A company called Klipsch, when he started, he had one 15-inch woofer in every speaker they made, be it a big corner horn or this, that. And they had that 15-inch woofer. That was what they used. So when they bought them in quantity, and they made everything work around that driver. And they made bigger systems and more of them, but they used the same basic stuff for everything they did because they could buy in quantity and they knew the parameters of that technology. They knew it extremely well. And where that's part of it too.
Yeah. So where do you see the future of loudspeaker industry going?
There's two different, you know, there's commercial, which is where I'm at home. The home stuff, I've got friends that have been in home audio forever. I know a lot of the major people in that industry, but you're dealing with it. You're always going to compete with the offshore stuff. If it's something that's, you know, you could have a certain company that's got a famous name. Well, that owner's dead now and gave away all of his money to MIT. And it's all about perception. So achieved is perceived as achieved. So if you get the right guy talking, you know, the company I'm talking about, they have Paul Harvey as their spokesperson. And it's a great company. They do good quality stuff. But is it the best? No. Is it the junkiest? No. But the profit margin for their product is insane, but all their money went into advertising, all of it. So they convinced everybody that this is the go-to thing. And here's a 94-year-old guy as their spokesperson telling you what to buy in sound. And I'm thinking, like, how many people 94 years old have really good hearing? Mm-hmm. I don't think the number's very great, but maybe people believed in him, and he was the he was the go-to. And because of that guy and his following, it's like LeBron James, if he says this is the best basketball, or Tiger Woods says this is the golf clubs he uses, you know, you're going to do it. You know, I mean, it's because of that. So it's all about marketing. It's all about branding. But it's really, you know, it's, do you want to be in a market that's got millions of people in it? Because chances of you succeeding when there's a lot of people in that market, you got an awful lot of suppliers. Right. When you're in a niche market, like the commercial sound business is a very small market as far as gigantic numbers. But the companies that produce, you know, container loads, most things, if it's hardware, if you could fill containers, you've got a problem. If you're doing huge amounts. And it's like Walmart when he started. Walmart, everybody goes, well, this guy only puts stores in little towns under 10,000 people, until he did every single one in the country. And then he turned around and goes, you know, Chicago looks pretty good. And Sears never knew what was coming to hit him. But he also had the third largest computer system in the world. He was third to the weather and the military. So he did what Amazon's doing now. He's a data company. Walmart, it was really, truly a data company. They didn't make anything of their own at that time. They just sold other people's stuff. And so does Kresge's, and so does, why did Walmart come out on top? Because he knew what to have and when to have it, and he could buy it in the quantities and give the customer satisfaction of what they wanted. So it's, you know, what sets McDonald's apart from Burger King? Burger King's struggling. You go, why? And they're advertising like nobody's business. And it's like, but to get the customers' loyalty, you know, it just, that's what it's really, it's about making people happy, making them, not only are they satisfied, but what they buy, that they want to tell their friends that this is, that when they deal with Dana and they get business advice, that there's the person you're going to go to, because they're really excited and they show an improvement in their lives. Because our lives are hard enough. Yeah. Hard enough. Yep. Make things easier for people, not harder.
That's what Chick-fil-A does. It's all about customer loyalty.
The most were, up until recently, they're the most profitable per square foot of any food service in history. And Apple stores are they're so much far beyond any retail gross per square foot in history. Nobody's even come close to what Apple does in their stores. It's unbelievable.
Right.
And Chick-fil-A, same thing. And Chick-fil-A, and they got a way of treating people, and they got a way of treating their employees.
Right.
And it's part of being a team. If you look at the prophet, he says, it's people, it's process, and it's people, product, and process. People, product, and process. That's what matters when you're building stuff. It's about people. And we've got to have more of the involvement of people that are in the companies, working for the customers. The customers are people. You got to treat them as people. You don't look at them as tomorrow's lunch. And if you're really smart, like when we did teleradiography, and if something, you know, somebody needed a full-blown PAC system from Siemens, we tell them what you really need is a Siemens system. You were made for sending the pictures to the doc's home at night. We did many PAC systems where we'd send between the emergency room and the x-ray department and pediatrics. But to do the whole hospital, we weren't interested in that business. We didn't want to do that business. We weren't big enough to do the business. So we would tell them, you really want to get a Philips system. You want to get this, and here's the guy to contact. And they respect you for that.
And
then they're going to buy what you do sell. And that's what's important, is taking care of the customer like you'd want to be taken care of. Not just selling them something because, you know, you go in a Honda dealership, they're going to sell you a Honda, whether it's great for you or not.
Yeah.
It's dumb. That's dumb. It doesn't get repeat business.
Yeah. So what's been the most rewarding part of your journey?
Oh, the most rewarding part is that family, first and foremost. Faith, absolutely. That's absolutely first. But the most rewarding part is to make it so that you make the world a little bit better place. And if you know, I'm a real fan of Steve Wozniak. I've known him. Oh, yeah. I've got an iPad here with his signature on the back, the first iPad. I had the second Macintosh in the world in my bedroom, and we presented it to 1,000 people.
The little box one.
Little box, you know.
Yeah, and, with the hard floppy.
And his whole thing is about, to be the best of the best of the best. You'll never have perfection, but it's about achieving excellence. You can make mediocre stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But I believe that if you make, you'll never be perfect, but you do excellence in everything you do. And you'll always have people, you'll always be happy. We've gone to making this portable system because the bigger systems, when you start talking bands and stuff, we don't have control over the amplifiers, the mixers and all the other stuff. And our biggest headaches with our big speakers is we get calls, you know, the mixers that we used with the bigger systems are all digital and they run off Wi-Fi. Well, if the Wi-Fi doesn't work, we can't work. So you get phone calls about, you know, I can't connect the mixer. Well, you know, and they got a new computer. It doesn't run the software. You get up there and go like, I want a product where you ship it to people and it's gone. And if they have a problem, they ship it back. We'll turn it around in less than a day and get it back to them. Yeah. And any of the big installed systems, when you start talking about bands and stuff, yeah, let's see, people are throwing stuff down. They're carting it in and out of trucks and they're wiring it up goofy and all that. You don't have control over any of that stuff. Try to control as much of you can in the customer experience. It's all about, that's why Mac was, it was a locked system, but the customer experience is, you know, back then was the best.
Yeah.
It looked cool. Yeah. It felt cool. It just worked. You didn't worry about viruses. You turned it on. It worked. You wanted to add a printer. I worked on computers since on all of them from the get-go. Right. You want to add a printer back in the day, it'd take somebody a whole day of just setting all the little micro switches and stuff. And you get the Apple, you plug the thing in and it prints. And you go, I like this. You know, where you had to have a different cable. It'd have to flip the pins. And you go like, oh, what is this? Why is this so hard?
That's what Apple got right, is they kept in mind who the user is. And they're not picky.
It's experience. It's experience.
It's the experience. So we're coming up.
And they found the niche market. They found the niche market with desktop publishing. That's what really saved them.
Because of their processing system. Because of the quality, yeah. So we're coming up on the end of another episode of Charged Up Studio. And thank you, Dennis, for joining us today and shedding light on how the business entrepreneurs can unpack and facilitate the world of product innovation and customer-centric design. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. If they want to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you?
Websites, www.althar.com. And they can email me from there or even phone me from there. It's althar.com. And I love helping out small businesses and helping them as much as I can. I've been, you know, quite involved with the Global Silicon Valley and Y Combinator, I guess, and Jumpstart and things like that. So,
and he'll be
First Robotics.
What's he'll beat himself right into your office to help you.
That's right. I'm always open to talk to anybody about, you got to pursue your dreams.
Yes.
You got to, but you have to work too. You have to really work. You have to have focus and never give up. If you never give up, it's when you do something and do it long enough, you actually get pretty good at it.
Yes.
So never give up.
So that concludes our podcast for today. So please leave a review on any of the streaming platforms you're listening to us on, or go to our Charged Up Studio Facebook page and leave a review there. Charged Up Studio is the product of Marketatomy and Marketatomy Academy, the e-learning system designed specifically with the micro business owner in mind. For more information and to register for our mini courses, go to marketatomy.academy. And that's it for today, guys. I will see you again next week with another exciting guest, and go out and have another charged up week. Until next time, talk to you later. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Charged Up Studio Live, the podcast with you, the small business owner in mind, with your host, Dana Olivo. Join us every Tuesday as we bring you valuable tips and insights into many of the topics you don't know about growing a successful business. Please leave us a review on any of the streaming platforms you are listening to, or visit us on the YouTube or Facebook page and leave a review or subscribe so you don't miss another episode. You can also support us through Patreon by visiting our website, chargedupstudio.live, and click on the Patreon link. Until next week, go out and have a charged up week.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.